Hi, my name is Mark Fontaine, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Service Design Show. This episode is another episode based on the conversation we recently had inside the Circle community. The topic of those conversations was how to make sure that your work gets followed up on after the initial wave of enthusiasm has gone. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with this situation. In the early stages of the service design process, people are often very excited. Doing research, uncovering insights, and coming up with new ideas brings a lot of positive energy. But as you and I know, that's just a fraction of the work. In order to see your research insights make a meaningful impact on the end user, still a lot of work needs to happen after these initial stages. And it's exactly this kind of work where a lot of valuable initiatives strand, where your hard work falls flat and starts collecting dust in a drawer. This isn't only a waste of time and money, it's also killing for your morale. You want to see that your work matters and is contributing to the goals of the organization. As this is such a common challenge among service design professionals, we decided to explore some of the best practices to prevent it inside the Circle. And in this episode, you'll hear Lisa Salamone share the key insights from that session. You'll learn about how to handle requests where your stakeholders just want another service blueprint, what to do when your colleagues don't exactly know what you do and the value that you bring, and how setting yourself up for success starts with building relationships with stakeholders, and how to do this even when you're an introvert. In the end, our goal is to drive decision-making forward inside the organization in a way that keeps the user's needs central. This episode should give you some new ideas on how to do that successfully. That about wraps it up for the introduction. The only thing left for me to say is, let the show begin. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Yes, happy to have you on. Like I said, as a proud Circle member for, is it a year now?
Almost a year. I started like in January, I think.
Yeah, I think you were sort of the batch of people who started after the initial group. Like we had an OG group of people who migrated from the campfire into the Circle. And you were sort of the first group of people who joined back then. And you're still here. So that's a good sign.
Yes, I love it.
Now, you had the... I wanted to say you had the opportunity to host a session. Yes, you did. But before we get into the topic of that session, could you share a brief introduction? Who are you? What do you do these days besides enjoying this winter wonderland in Colorado?
Yeah, my name's Lisa Salamone, and I am a service designer, design strategist in the healthcare tech space. So I've been in healthcare for about 7 years, first working in care delivery, in the future of care delivery with innovations like virtual care and using big data, and then jumped into operations. So boots on the ground, what's happening in the front line, really focused on emergency services. And then I moved into the genetic space. So that's where I am right now, working as a service designer with really smart people, trying to help everyone and, you know, get the care you need.
Service design in the genetic space. Like, if this isn't a tribute to the fact that service design has sort of moved into every corner of our world, then I don't know what is. Yeah. You, like I said, had the opportunity to host a session about a topic that I think most listeners will be familiar with. You titled it Riding on the Design Enthusiasm, correct? So sometimes I like to do the question of the end at the start. So if somebody makes it all the way till the end of this episode, what do you hope they will get out of this conversation?
To bring your stakeholders along in the journey. One thing that I've encountered is, you know, you go into these workshops and you put a lot of effort into it and everyone's like, oh, this is great. We love it. And then what happens after that workshop? Where does the work go? It's not really about how you push your work after the workshop, but how you begin that work and really engaging stakeholders in the beginning, in the process to get to that point to share out.
don't spoil too much, but if people want to make sure that their work continues and get some helpful tips, best practices, ideas on how you can increase the chance that your work actually gets used, I think that's the conversation we're going to have right now. You already alluded a little bit upon the fact that sometimes your work falls flat, you do a workshop, and then what's next? Can you introduce us a bit to your thoughts around writing the design, the wave of design enthusiasm? Like, what do you see when you think about that topic? If we have to give an example of what this looks like, writing the wave of design enthusiasm, like, what is a stereotypical example?
I would say in the workshop, you're sharing your insights, you're excited about it, you have a service blueprint and people are reacting, you're able to anchor conversations on that service blueprint. And what would be amazing is if those stakeholders continue to use that service blueprint as an anchor to road mapping and decision making. Being in those conversations after that initial share out to continue to engage stakeholders and decision makers and reflect on the user's voice within all those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically it's when you recognize that you're just being involved in a small part of the what you hope to be the bigger design process, like that's the signal we're talking about here. Like, and the workshop is maybe a stereotypical example. It can be other ways and the service blueprint is just an artifact, but you sort of feel that you've created something, you've done research, you present insights, and then you want to sort of continue with that, but nothing happens. Or at least you don't see the impact of your work that you would have hoped for, right? That's sort of the thing that happens a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Your insights don't move around the company. You kind of wonder what's next. Where is it going to go? Who should I talk to next? Should we share this, you know, artifact with, and how should we share it? A lot of open-ended questions, wondering what are the next steps.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of also discouraging and a bit, I don't know if disappointing is the right word, because our work can be a lot of fun and it gives a lot of energy, like especially in the early stages where you're discovering, where you're doing ideation work, where you're doing sense making, everybody is excited, a lot of energy. In reality, the hard work starts after this, and then that's where things tend to slow down, get sidetracked, and what can we do to decrease the chance that that will happen and that the hard work actually also gets done? Now, a question I had here on my notes is, okay, let's say we somehow managed to do that. We managed to make sure that the work gets followed up on. What's there to gain? Like, maybe this is an obvious question, but what is there to gain?
Influencing decision making, be focused on evidence-based search and information. So seeing our products, roadmaps influenced by the actual users versus information that isn't evidence-based and more emotionally driven.
Yeah, and that's what we want. We want to see users, patients, students, homeowners, whatever your user type is, being represented in the things that get out into the world, right? Into the services. The other question I had here, what does success look like? But I guess that's it, that you sort of can trace back the things that you've put out into the world, that they are based upon, like you said, research, insights, rather than assumptions, or I don't know, driven by technology, stuff like that, right? So the obvious question, what makes this so difficult?
I believe it is not spending as much time in the beginning in the planning process. You know, we are requested to fix this problem, and maybe we're not even solving the right problem. So many times we have to move fast, we have timelines, we can't really think thoroughly about what are the questions that we need, what are our assumptions, we just go for it, and maybe we're addressing the wrong problem. Also, I think that we don't spend enough time to understand our stakeholders and their needs and what matters to them in order to push work forward, build those relationships.
Okay, so you already said this, but there is little time. Like, how have you heard examples of how do we do this? Because this is going to be a reality in a lot of organizations. You just come in to solve the problem. Where do you find the time? Where do you find the opportunity to have those conversations up front?
From my work and, you know, the failures I have is not spending the time to get to know my stakeholders, the decision makers and the leaders, and moving, like I said, moving too fast. So through trial and error, I've learned that a lot of the work is really about relationship building and taking the time, like I said, to meet with the stakeholders, understand their needs, where their struggles are. Really, you know, we have empathy for our users, but our stakeholders are also our users because they're the ones who are moving the work forward. And we think of stakeholders as, you know, leaders, but we also have to think about the people who are, you know, boots on the ground, making the work happen. We have to understand their point of views in order to have alignment throughout the organization and remove those silos and the territory battles. That's, I think once you have alignment with your different stakeholder groups, you're able to work faster and more efficiently.
And that's the work you need to do upfront without anyone asking you to do that work.
Right, right. And you don't know that right away when you're just starting your career, how important that is and how many barriers that could actually break down. It is really just trial and error, how to engage people. And a lot of times we're not taught, you know, how to engage and build those relationships.
And I guess the problem that arises from not doing this, not investing this time and energy up front, is that at the end of whatever project you've been assigned to, you deliver something that doesn't match the expectations or the needs of the people who sort of asked for your help, and then things don't get used. Is that a correct conclusion?
Yeah, exactly. You have to understand the goals.
Yeah, and what they need. Like, maybe they don't need a service blueprint, or they need it in a very specific way so that it fits in their roadmap, or like, you need to know that. Mm-hmm. Now, how did we get here? As in, you mentioned that nobody teaches us this, get called in maybe too late, or we don't invest the time up front. Somehow I feel that this isn't like, we know that we need to invest, we need to understand our users, right? We do this naturally for our end users. So I'm really curious, why do you feel we don't do it as much in our own profession?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I feel like a lot of times when we go in, or from my experience as a service designer within healthcare, I'm hired in and some people know what service design is. They're like, oh yeah, make us a journey map. Like, that's what we need. We need a journey map. Or they don't know anything about design, service design, you know, human-centered design. And so from my experience, a lot of times I'm trying to teach them. I'm trying to get them what they need so that I could show my value. I am also, you know, challenged to like meet those deadlines and not have the time to really teach and walk people through, especially when they really don't know too much about my expertise and my goals. And I think that's where we really need to focus in the beginning conversations. What are our stakeholders' goals, but what are my goals within the work? And being really clear about that.
We had a episode on this where I recall, I think it was Ben McEmmon who mentioned, you have to make this into a habit. And this is like having these conversations. Otherwise, you're going to do it once or with two stakeholders and then it's going to move away. Well, a good strategy might be just to put it in your agenda for 2 hours per week or something like that, and then figure out these goals and align on that. You mentioned something about expectations of people who don't know about what kind of work you do, what value your work brings, or have limited perspective on this. We could also flip this question around and ask ourselves, is it our job to take it beyond, let's say, the workshop? Like, is it our job? How do you feel about that?
I think it is, because we have the tools, or we, you know, use the methods to bring these voices out. And I feel it. I've always been in-house. So I always like to see my work moving forward and seeing how it gets implemented. So I could have a bias there versus, you know, a consultant that comes in and does their work and then they pass it off. And, you know, it is the decision and next steps is the company to move forward. But if you have a resource in-house that is so close to the information and can speak on behalf of the users, I think it's our job to continue to engage and make sure we are using that evidence from the research, from the design assets to influence the decision making, the product roadmap, building some type of framework to actually make a decision in benefit of our users.
Yeah, this is the good thing and the problem at the same time with our field. We take so much responsibility in getting showing impact. And I'm not saying that others don't, but for the simplicity of this example, like if you are a graphic designer, I hope that you're concerned with impacting something with the work that you do. But at some point you might just say like, okay, I've made this document or I've helped lay out this presentation. And that might be sort of the handoff where you say, okay, this is the boundary of my craft. I've done my work. This is successful. And again, I hope that these people are also concerned with impact. But for us, when we look at services, like it's so holistic and it's a big responsibility to take on moving all the way from research to impact on the day-to-day groundwork. Yeah, that's... There are a lot of steps involved there. It is our responsibility, but to a certain extent, you know,
we're not the decision makers.
We're not the decision makers. And that makes us a bit frustrating sometimes and, yeah, disappointing. How far can we go, right?
Yeah.
So you already mentioned a few things about how to set yourself up for success, like having these conversations early on, aligning on expectations. I'm curious, did you hear any other things that emerged during our circle conversation that could help people set up for success?
Yeah, things that I heard. One that I like is leaving your badge at the door during workshops and kind of removing the hierarchy within conversations to really bring out great ideas in those workshops. And then having the ability to say, you know, what are the next steps and who's involved? Planning out other workshops after that main workshop to continue to revisit. Like, you know, you said, make it a habit to have meetings with stakeholders. You could also make it a habit to engage the team and see where they're at and see how their work is mapping back to that service blueprint. Like if you create a blue sky future state, how is it mapping back to that blueprint?
So this is an example where you sort of have to calculate in, I don't know, a weekly or a monthly check-in with that team. Like, don't make it a handoff, make it a journey, right? It's not,
exactly.
It doesn't end when you walk out the door. And this is, I think, one of the things that is very easy to overlook. Like, projects have a deadline and they end on a certain date. And then you sort of feel like, okay, I need to move on to the next thing because, I don't know, budget is done, priorities have shifted. And somehow you still need to stay in touch and see what happens and see how you can help.
Right. And then you get new projects too. So then you're stretched thin. And how do you navigate that?
How do you navigate that?
In my work, I've always been within a focus area where the work that I did with another project could influence my new work. So always engaging similar stakeholders, having, you know, the same topic area where I can be almost an expert within that area.
Yeah, that
helps. But I don't see myself as an expert. I just see myself as more of a knowledge broker. How do I take other people's specialty expertise and distill it into, like, this is what the journey looks like. And that's for patients, providers, internal stakeholders alike.
So you become sort of a domain specialist. You gain specific domain knowledge and that helps you to keep the conversation going. Yeah, I can see how that would be beneficial. While I also see how it could be beneficial when you move from project to project because then you're able to make cross-department connections, stuff like that, or cross-discipline domain connections. But yeah. So, okay, got it. Anything else setting up for success?
I believe one thing to, like I mentioned, around understanding the problem space, really listening to internal folks to understand from their perspective, what are the questions that we need to ask? And how can we really identify the true problem to attack? I think that is key in really building out the right research plan and the right method in using a journey map versus a service blueprint. Like, at what level do you need to represent this journey?
I would say, I'm curious if you can be more specific, because this sounds like good advice, right? Asking the right questions, figuring out what the right research plan needs to be. How? Like any specific...
Tactile-y how?
Yeah.
Yeah. From my experience, one-on-ones are the beginning of that conversation, to be able to understand each department and, you know, how they might work against each other. There's a lot of, you know, working in silos and protecting my territory. So the first point is to listen one-on-one to that individual, understand their needs, but then come in and show like how silos are working and the flow of information. And then as a group, look at that journey. So what is the patient provider journey, and focus on their needs versus focusing on ours. And then we can start to pull out more questions, and using these two data sources, so like the one-on-ones and this group activity, to see where there's the crossovers and where there's patterns that we could then say, this is the overarching problem or goal that we want to achieve.
So if I would translate this, and these are my words, so help me out if I'm completely off here, but I feel that this is like having a conversation where you zoom out. So, okay, great. You ask me to help you with this specific thing. Can you show me what happens next or what happened before? Like, what are you working towards? What do you hope that this will contribute to? And then when you have the, for lack of a better word, the bigger picture, in a much better position to figure out what you need to deliver to make those next steps, to help in those next steps. So having the conversation about, okay, this happens on the workshop level, but how does the workshop fit into the bigger picture? Does that sound like something that you think would be valuable?
Yeah, definitely.
And again, these are some of these things I feel, do we really need to repeat them? Like, isn't this obvious? But I don't think if you don't make this a common practice or part of your, and this has also been on some of the circle conversations, if you don't make it a standard procedure for yourself, so like when you do an intake with your internal stakeholder and just have a checklist of, sure, I'd be happy to help you, but we always need to go through these five things together so that I know how to help you. If you don't have like that kind of checklist or framework or process, you'll always be scrambling. So have a framework or a checklist and include something like this in there.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Now, I've mentioned the circle a few times already. If you're not familiar with the community, I'd like to take this opportunity to quickly bring you up to speed and see if it's maybe something that you'd also like to join. The Circle is a small and intimate community for in-house service design professionals who want to deepen their craft. Being an in-house service design professional, it can be really hard to find people around you who truly understand what you do and can help you grow. The Circle provides a safe space where you can connect with like-minded peers from other companies across the world and learn from their stories. As a member of the community, you get to join our monthly sessions where we deep dive into specific topics. Every topic is brought forward by one of the community members. This ensures that the things we discuss are relevant to the challenges that you face. Recent topics that we've explored include how to cultivate influence without feeling dirty, how to work with systems of journey maps, best practices for service prototyping, and the topic that we are covering in this episode, how you can make sure that the user's needs stay central during decision-making process after the initial excitement of the design process has gone. So if this sounds like a community of professionals that you'd like to join, here's what you need to do. Head over to servicedesignshow.com/circle and see if you qualify to become a member. So that's servicedesignshow.com/circle. And you'll also find the link in the show notes of this episode. Anything else? So what have we covered for setting up for success? Like having the zoomed out conversation early on, do one-on-ones.
I think another point that I haven't brought up is finding advocates within the organization, a leader that you've connected with that they can also, you know, share the bigger vision of what service design is, just to get people on board with what does service design do. I think that that has been a struggle in where I do hit the roadblocks is when people don't really understand why we're doing X, Y, Z. And if you have a strong partner that can also share how it can impact the organization, then that's super helpful.
And what would they need to share? What's the message?
The message is how we could impact the patient-provider experience, for my case, and how we're not looking at the whole experience. So within these projects that I've done in the past, everyone's in their vertical and they're really focused on their product and how it impacts their users, but that product might span other business units. And so a challenge that I've come across is, you know, how to break those silos and think more on a experience level, and seeing your product intertwined through that experience helps people better understand how to meet the needs of the patients and the providers or the users. So I think that's the bigger picture, is reframing, changing mindsets to think of holistically, what does that experience look like? And how can we work together throughout the business units to impact that experience versus our point in time, our narrow focus?
And that is a message that you, I'm sure, are communicating daily, but you are also saying find a senior level advocate who is maybe, I don't know, more respected or has more airtime or has more convincing power and more authority within the organization to basically share the same message.
Yeah, it's been there longer. You know, my role currently, I've been with the company a short amount of time. I'm making my way through the organization, talking to folks, but having that person to say, oh, have you heard of Lisa? is helpful.
We need to find a good word. Like, an advocate sounds fun, but have you heard of Lisa? Like, having that person, like, you should hand out stickers or something like that. Because I do agree that that gives you so much leverage and it sets you up for success. Like, if you've been introduced by the right people, like, it can save you a lot of time, work, and effort, and yeah.
Yeah, and they don't even have to be a design director, design VP. When I was at Kaiser Permanente, my manager was in love with design. She trusted me as the expert, but she was spreading the word. She really spoke highly of service design, the methods, and really focusing on the patient and provider. Within healthcare, design, service design, design thinking is a newer expertise. And usually it's focused on the provider and the provider needs. But it doesn't make sense. You would think that it'd be very human-centered, focused on the patient. And that seems like a no duh, like you said, of course, but that's not the reality. And so being able to say, our end user is the patient. And this is using service design, we can look at all aspects and make sure that it is desirable, viable, feasible for all parties is a nice little package.
Yeah. And I can imagine someone listening right now and saying, like, yeah, sounds great. But like, how do I get access to these people? Like, might seem like a tough goal, but I think the message here is, it might be a struggle and it might be difficult, but it's worth the effort, because if you do manage to find these senior leaders to help you out, you'll gain a lot. So, do you have a secret strategy or tactic for actually finding these advocates?
Talking to people, rubbing shoulders with them virtually is more difficult, which I think, just being in the virtual space with our design assets makes it even more challenging to communicate the value. Usually we print out these big journey maps and you have everyone there, but now you might be doing virtual workshops where you have them digitized and you have to find ways, a new way to explain and storytell that journey that you weren't using when you would blow it up really large and have in-person workshops. That was a little tangent. What was the question again?
Well, the secret tactic for finding an advocate. But I like that you went into the virtual and remote space because, yeah, I can imagine that it's different now building these relationships where every meeting via Zoom or Teams or whatever you use is very functional, very utilitarian usually, rather than the socializing or the relational aspect.
Yeah. And it's all, I almost feel like it's against the rules to take a little time to build a relationship in these meetings. It's very much like, let's get to that agenda and cover these topics and bye guys, see you in the next virtual meeting and not talk to them until, you know, next week. And so you do have to be really intentional in cutting some time out in the beginning to say, let's just connect. Let's talk about, you know, what happened this weekend, or using good tools to ask questions. Like I have these cards that I have on my desk and you just pull them out and it's just like a fun question and you get to know people a little bit more. You start to laugh and then it just makes that 30 minute hour long meeting more enjoyable because you've built a small connection and those small connections build relationships.
Mm. Yeah. And I don't know if we ever will, but we have to get over the idea that this isn't productive, right? Building relationships doesn't feel productive. And that's that is hurting. I was thinking while you were sharing this, if I would have to do this and I'm sort of in an environment that isn't very open to this approach, I would frame it probably as research. I would say I'm doing research. I'm trying to learn something and I'm not connecting with you to network or to build a relationship. No, I want to learn a few things. I have some questions about the organization, something like that. And I think like that might ease some people into actually creating the time for you.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing that I love being new to the organization is I'm just like, I don't know anything. Just please share with me. Let me understand, you know, our products and, you know, the challenges that we have or the inside scoop. And then people are just willing to share and like dish it out. And I'm like, okay, this is great. I'll take it. And, you know, it's almost therapeutic in a way for our stakeholders when we have these conversations because their voice is being heard and you have to continue to move their voice throughout the project, the process, because that's where the buy-in is. That's where they say, yes, this is my information. This is my voice. And I see now how this influences the end users or, you know, the organization as a whole.
Well, my brain works in funny ways, but during these conversations, sometimes I get like these visuals. And now I was seeing like those FBI or CIA war rooms where they are building like the web of connections and putting mugshots on the wall and then to a location. I think that's basically what you're trying to do as well before a project starts. Like you're building the web, you're building the mental model of the internal framework. Maybe not just mental, maybe you're actually building a physical map of the network. And yeah, to sort of build these connections, build these bridges. It's funny how our work sometimes takes us to places we didn't hear about at school.
Yeah, connecting the dots. That's so funny because I think about that often, the war room as well, and like drawing that string to one department to the other. How do they communicate? What's the transfer of information look like? How do they influence each other? That's a lot of my work, is just understanding the inner workings and being that detective.
Yeah, being that detective. I think that's a good way to describe that. And that is really important work because everything else becomes so much easier after that. Yeah. Now, I'm curious if this conversation inside the circle also raised some new questions for you.
Yeah, I think one of the big questions that I have that I still don't have answers to is, or the right way to do it is, how do I gain knowledge from other research that has been done within the organization? So for instance, I'm new to Myriad Genetics, and there has been a lot of work within the space that I'm working in. And just being able to understand after people leave the organization, where is that information? How do I glean insight from it? And how does that past research influence my current research? So I'm not doing rework. And I feel like in a lot of big organizations, there's a lot of rework because there's a design team here, there's a design team here. There's no real group built together to bring that information from these siloed design teams, at least in the organizations I've worked for. I'm sure people have figured it out, but I haven't. So I would love to talk to them.
Again, staying in the analogies and metaphors here, I think you would need a historian or something like
that. Yeah,
I know that. Organizational historian.
I know some companies have librarians just to collect the information and be able to understand the audiences that they're distributing it to and have an easy way to find it.
So it's funny because with sort of all the quantitative data and data warehouses, databases, I don't know which new terms come up these days, but there is a big strive towards centralization and having a single source of truth and everybody using the same data set. Where are we in that story, right? It's maybe much harder with qualitative data, but still, yeah.
Yeah, and being able to find the specific data points that you're looking for. You could be directed to a database and be like, just search for it, look through it. Really having a taxonomy and a way to search is something that I've struggled with in the past.
Yeah, I'm curious how technology will help us in the near future around these things, like transcribing interviews or transcribing videos, making them searchable, like making our research data more accessible, more searchable, basically. Curious. I think technology can help us a lot in the coming years. I wouldn't bet all my money on it, but there's definitely room for improvement there. So one of the final questions to sort of head towards the end of this conversation, if you look back and think about, let's say, 3 years back in your career, what do you wish somebody would have told you back then about this topic?
Don't be shy. That's the biggest one. I'm by fault, I would say, an introvert who doesn't necessarily easily communicate with people. And I think being able to say it's going to really help you if you just knock on doors and ask questions and show that you don't know the answers, because you don't, and that's fine, and you're trying to learn. That's what I would say. I would say be more curious.
Yeah, I want to dig deeper into this for a second. How did you manage to overcome that? Because if we send out the message that this is just for extroverts, like, I don't know, half of the population will quit this after this episode. So any tips for introverts? How did you overcome this?
Practice, practice, practice. I would say go in as if you're talking to a friend and you just want to know about their day. Because that's essentially what I do. I start off with, tell me about like your daily life. Like, what do you do here? And understand them from a personal relationship. I would also say people want to help you. They genuinely do. And I think that's also something that could be a barrier, is that you feel like you're being a burden, or they don't understand why you're bothering them. But if you're trying to help the organization, people are always, I find, willing to help you out.
And that's such good advice. And I would wholeheartedly support that. And I think you're absolutely right. Practice, practice, practice. Start with some easy targets, right? To gain that initial confidence. And then you'll see that it's maybe not as scary. And like you said, you'll see that people want to generally help you. And then things become definitely easier. And like you said, if you go in have these conversations without there being an agenda or a specific project and just see what they are up to. There is less pressure on those conversations, and then you can build from there.
I also think that starting as soon as you've joined a company gives you a little leeway to be like, I'm new, help me. Versus, you know, if you've been there for a while, though, even if you've been there for a while, you should still engage people and share what you know, what you've learned.
And keeping that beginner's mind, we always preach that, but it is so hard. Like, can you come into a meeting while you're 3 years or 5 years in an organization and say, well, I don't know anything. Please tell me what's going on. Like that, I wouldn't know why, but that would be a very good attitude to bring, I think. So Lisa, you mentioned that you're curious about the question, how to find data, how to organize it, where is the organizational historian or librarian? If people have some ideas about this and want to reach out to you, what is the best way to connect?
I would say LinkedIn.
I will make sure to add all the links in the show notes of this episode. Well done. We started off by writing on the design enthusiasm, and I think we shared a lot about that it starts really early before the wave has started, and don't wait till the moment that you're sort of handing off your results. It's difficult. It's challenging. At the same time, if you make it a habit, maybe it's not as hard as it seems.
Yeah, definitely. And the service design asset is not the goal. The goal is the decision, and the design process is the way to get you to that goal.
And on that note, I would like to wrap up this conversation by thanking you, Lisa, for coming on the Service Design Show. I look forward to seeing you very soon in our next Circle session. So yeah, thank you and see you soon.
Yeah, thanks again, Mark.
If you've made it this far, I hope that you enjoyed the conversation and got something useful out of it. Once again, a big thanks to Lisa for coming on and sharing the Circle highlights with us. As a final note, don't forget that if you want to get all the ins and outs of the things we discuss inside this community and not just the summary here on the podcast, consider joining us in the Circle. You'll meet other passionate professionals who want to learn and grow just like you. There is an application process to become a member of this community, so if you'd like to know if you qualify, head over to servicedesignshow.com/circle for all the details. And the link is also in the show notes of this episode. My name is Mark Fontijn, and I want to thank you for spending a brief part of your day with me. Please keep making a positive impact, and I'll catch you very soon in a brand new episode of The Service Design Show. See you then.